Around nightfall, Tito let Doc off on Dunecrest, and it was like landing on some other planet. He walked into the pipeline to find a couple hundred people he didn't know, but who were acting like long-time regulars. Worse, nobody he did know was there at all. No Ensenada Slim, or Flacco the Bad. No St. Flip or Downstairs Eddie. Doc looked into Huevos, an epic lunch, and the Screaming Ultraviolet Brain, and Man of La Mancha, where the menudo got your nose running just looking at it. And each time it was the same story. Nobody he recognized. He thought briefly about going to his apartment, but started worrying that he wouldn't recognize it either, or worse, it wouldn't know him, wouldn't be there, key wouldn't fit or something. Then it occurred to him that maybe Tito had actually dropped him in some other beach town, Manhattan or Hermosa or Redondo, and that the bars, eateries, and so forth he'd been walking into were ones that happened to be similarly located in this other town. Same view of the ocean, or corner of the street, for example. So he grasped his head carefully in both hands, and mentally advising himself to focus in and pay attention, waited for the next non-threatening pedestrian to come by. "Excuse me, sir. I seem to be a little disoriented. Could you please tell me if this is, by any chance, Gordita Beach?" As sanely as he could manage. And instead of running off in panic after the nearest law enforcement, this party said, "Wow, Doc, it's me. You okay? You look like you're freaking out." And after a while, Doc dug how this was Dinas, or somebody impersonating Dinas, which, in the circumstances, he'd settle for. "Where is everybody, man?" "Some college break or something. A lot of junior hellraisers in town. I'm sticking close to the tube till it's over." Dinas had some dry ice-enhanced Mexican product, and they went down on the beach to smoke it. They watched the flashing wing lights of a single-engine plane, looking fragile and somehow already lost, taking off into the darkening glow over the water. "How was Vegas, man?" "Won a bucket full of nickels off a slot machine. Far out. Listen. Guess who's back?" The way Dinas was looking at him, it couldn't be anybody else. Doc torched up a cool, but lit the wrong end, and didn't notice for a while. "What's she up to?"
"Could you put that thing out? That's some evil-smelling shit."
Or to rephrase it, "Who's she with?"
"Nobody, far as I know. She's staying at Flip's place over that surf shop in El Porto. The Saint split for Maui."
"How's her spirits?"
"Why ask me?"
"I mean, is she paranoid? Does the heat know she's back? Last I heard, there's all these high-priority APBs out on her. What happened to that?"
"She don't seem too worried."
"Well, that's weird. Had she made some kind of a deal, too?"
"We could walk up there if you want," said Dinas.
For any number of reasons, Doc thought not. Dinas went drifting off to watch Lawrence Welk.
"What?" Doc couldn't help commenting. "Something about Norma Zimmer," Dinas called over his shoulder. "I'm still figuring out what exactly."
The key worked. The place hadn't been robbed or rifled. The plants were still alive. Doc watered everything, put coffee on to percolate, and called Fritz. "Your girlfriend's back," Fritz announced, and fell silent. After a while, growing irritated, Doc said,
"Yeah, and her front ain't too bad either. So what?"
According to the ARPANET, Shasta Faye Hepworth showed up day before yesterday at LAX, plus which the FBI, who can somehow monitor me now when I'm jacked in, keeps coming around asking what my interest in her is. You mind telling me what the hell's going on? Doc recapped the trip to Vegas, or what he remembered, interrupting himself 10 minutes in to point out, "Of course,
If they can tap your computer lines, the phone here ought to be duck soup for them.
Oops, agreed Fritz, but continue.
Yeah, well, Mickey seems to be in one piece. The feds have got him on ice. Glenn Sharlock is still dead, but hey, who cares about the criminal element, right?
He complained for a minute and a half more till Fritz said, Well, it's your problem now. This ARPANET trip is eating up my time, which is better spent chasing after all them hardened skips and deadbeats. So I think I'm going to take a break. If there's anything else, maybe you'd better ask now, because it's about to be back to the world of flesh and blood for old FD.
Let's see, Doc said. There's Puck Beaverton.
Recall doing a little business with a party of that name way back when. What about him?
I don't know, Doc said. Something.
Some weird acid vibe. You got it. Some strange inexpressible imbalance in the laws of karma.
Knew you'd understand.
Doc, don't say it. That kid Sparky still working for you? Come on around. I'll introduce you. Also got some of this new shit. They call it tie stick. Kinda gummy. But once you get it lit...
No sooner had Doc hung up than the phone rang again, and it was Bigfoot, who started right in.
So, the elusive Miss Hepworth, it seems, has rejoined your little community of drug-ravaged misfits.
Wow, no shit. News to me.
Oh, that's right. You've been temporarily off the planet again. Phone calls, in-person visits, nothing has seemed to work. You know how anxious we get.
Little R&R. Wish I had your work ethic.
No, you don't. Any developments on the Coy Harlingen matter?
Chasing down one bum lead after another is all.
Any of them include young... What's his name again? Beaverton, I believe.
Fuck off, Bigfoot. Traced Puck as far as West Hollywood, but nobody's seen him since Mickey did his board fade.
As for Dr. Bladnoid and his unfortunate sports injury, we did mention your interesting puncture wound theory to Dr. Noguchi's people. Inquired about testing for copper-gold dental alloys and so on. And one of them smiled strangely and said, Mind if we call in the lab on this one? Of course not, I said. Wonderful. O'Dwayne! And in bounded this vicious Labrador retriever with, I must say, such an unhelpful attitude that we all became rather discouraged.
Gee, and they're supposed to be such great kids' dogs.
We have one in this house, actually.
Only thought it'd be a helpful tip to a fellow professional. Just try and save you some trouble down the line's all.
How's that?
When your own hearing comes up.
Sportello, are you suggesting...
Doc allowed himself one evil grin a week, and tonight was the night.
All's I'm saying is if it happened to Thomas Noguchi, the most brilliant medical examiner in the USA, well, who among you protect and servers is safe? One county supervisor with a bug up his ass is all it takes.
Total silence.
Bigfoot?
I had been enjoying a quiet family evening with Mrs. Bjornsson and the children and the dog, watching Lawrence Welk, and now see what you've done.
Doc heard an extension being picked up, a woman's voice with a steep front edge to it and very short decay time said, Is everything all right, Kit Kat?
What's this? Doc said.
This is Mrs. Chastity Bjornsson. And if that is one more sociopathic special employee of my husband, I'll thank you to stop harassing him on his day off, as he has quite enough to do all week trying to keep dopers and lowlifes like yourself off the streets.
There, there, my little boysenberry.
Sportello's only been indulging in his idea of humor.
Doc Sportello? The Doc Sportello? So... At last, Mr. Moral Turpitude himself. Have you any idea of the therapist bills around here for which you are directly responsible?
Now, Snookums, the department picks up most of that.
After a deductible that would choke a horse. And meanwhile, Christian, I quite fail to understand your spineless response to this wretched hippie freak with his unending provocations.
Doc discovered he was out of cigarettes. He put the receiver on the kitchen table and went looking for his carton of cools, which after a lengthy search turned up in the icebox, next to the remains of a pizza he'd forgotten about, not all of whose ingredients, though colorful, he could identify any longer. Feeling despite this a little hungry, he decided to make a peanut butter and mayonnaise sandwich, located a cold can of Bergie, and started into the other room to flip on the television, when he noticed strange noises coming from the phone, whose receiver actually seemed to be off the hook. Oh! He went to put the instrument to his ear, though the Bjornsons, now in full screaming confrontation, had actually been audible across the kitchen, reviewing some recent personal history with footnotes, unfamiliar to Doc but still embarrassing. And after a minute or two of calculating how likely were his chances of getting in even another word, he replaced the receiver in its cradle as gently as if he were about to sing it a lullaby, and went in to watch the last couple minutes of Adam 12. The Saturday horror movie tonight was Val Lewton's I Walked with a Zombie, 1943, hosted by subcultural superstar Larry Vincent, a.k.a. Seymour, who liked to address his population of faithful viewers as Fringies, and also hosted the annual Halloween show at the Wiltern Theater, which Doc tried never to miss. He had seen this zombie picture a couple of hundred times and still got confused by the ending, so he spent the news hour rolling joints to help him through, especially with the calypso singing. But somehow, despite his best efforts, fell asleep in the middle, as so often before. Next morning, ocean smell, fresh coffee, a cool edge. Doc was in Huevos, going through the Sunday Times to see if there was anything new about the Wolfman case, which there wasn't. Though, of course, with 20 or 30 different sections, you never knew what might be hiding among the real estate ads, and was about to dig into a specialty of the house known as Shoot the Pier. Basically, avocados, sprouts, jalapenos, pickled artichoke hearts, Monterey Jack cheese, and green goddess dressing on a sourdough loaf that had first been sliced lengthwise, spread with garlic butter and toasted, 79 cents, and a bargain at half the price. When who should stroll in, who else but Shasta Fay? She was wearing, near as Doc could tell, unless she owned a drawerful of them now, the same old Country Joe and the Fish t-shirt as in the olden days, same sandals and bikini bottom. Strangely, his appetite did not produce a hall pass and asked to be excused. But on the other hand, what was this? Was he having an acid flashback? Was he about to run into James Moondoggy Darren in the time tunnel or something? Last Doc knew, his ex-old lady here had been at least a person of interest to countless levels of law enforcement. Yet here she was now, same get-up, same carefree attitude, as if she still hadn't even met Mickey Wolfman, as if some stereo needle had been lifted and set back down on some other sentimental oldie on the compilation LP of history. "Hi, Doc." Which, of course, was all it ever took, and sure enough, would you look at this? Suavely positioning the book review over his lap, he grinned as sincerely as possible. "Heard you were back. Got your postcard, thanks." One of those little puzzled frowns she may have perfected around kindergarten. "Postcard?" "Well, that's probably significant, too," he thought. "And I better write it down or I'll forget. Ouija board pranksters at work again, no doubt. Thought it was your handwriting. Must have been somebody else's. So, where have you been?"
"Had to go up north. Family stuff.
Shrug. Anything been happening down here?
Bring up Mickey. Don't bring up Mickey. Your friend in the construction business?
Oh, that's all over.
She didn't look specially sad about it, or happy either. Maybe I missed something on the news. He isn't back by any chance.
She smiled and shook her head. I've been away.
Around her neck on a piece of thong, she was wearing a seashell, maybe even brought back from a distant Pacific island, whose shape and markings reminded Doc of one of the zomes in Mickey's now-abandoned project in the desert. Ensenada Slim came in.
Howdy, Shasta. Hey, Doc. Bigfoot's been looking for you.
Oh, boy. How long ago?
Just saw him over to the brain. Seemed pretty intense about something.
Either of you like to finish this?
Doc crept out the back way, only to find Bigfoot lounging in the alley with a peculiar smile.
Don't look so nervous. I'm not planning to inflict bodily harm much as I'd like to. Part of this godforsaken hippie era and its erosion of masculine values, I expect. Wyatt Earp would have been using your head for sledgehammer practice by now.
Hey, that reminds me. My bag. Just going to reach in my bag here, okay? Two fingers. Slowly.
Doc brought out the antique coffee cup he'd found in Vegas.
Though one grows hardened in police work, said Bigfoot, occasionally one's sensibilities are profoundly challenged. What is this supposed to be?
It's Wyatt Earp's personal mustache cup, man. See? It's got his name on it and everything.
May I, without wishing to cause offense, inquire as to the provenance of this?
He paused as if groping for the right term.
Antique dealer in Vegas, named Delwyn Quite. Seemed respectable enough.
Bigfoot nodded bitterly, and for some time.
You obviously don't subscribe to Tombstone Memorabilia Collector's Alert. Brother Quite poses for its centerfold at least every other month. The man is a byword of fraudulent Irpiana.
Wow. And worse, what if that also meant the Liberace necktie was a fake, too?
It's the thought, isn't it? Said Bigfoot. Listen.
And exactly in cadence with Doc saying the same thing,
I'm sorry about last night.
They paused for exactly the same number of pulses, and again in unison said,
You? Why should you be sorry?
This could have gone on all day, but then Doc said, Weird. And Bigfoot said, Extraordinary. And the spell was broken. They went ambling down the alley in silence till Bigfoot said,
I'm not sure how to tell you this.
Oh, shit. Who is it this time?
Leonard Germain Loosemeat, whom you might recall as a minor league heroin dealer in Venice. Floater. Found him in one of those canals.
Eldrano, Coy Harlingen's dealer.
Yes.
Funny coincidence.
Define funny.
Doc heard something in his voice and looked over, and thought for a second that Bigfoot had finally arrived at his own long-overdue cop-related nervous breakdown. His lip was trembling, his eyes moist. He caught and held Doc's gaze. Finally,
You don't want to be fucking with this, Doc.
Puck Beaverton had issued the same free advice. Which didn't keep Doc from driving up to Venice that evening to see what he could see. Leonard had been living in a bungalow beside a canal with a rowboat tied up at a little pier in the backyard. Periodically, a dredge came through, and all the dopers who'd hidden their stashes in the canal could be observed the night before running around frantically, trying to remember who'd put what where exactly. Doc happened to arrive in the middle of one of these exercises. In the soft and bath-warm night,
Half a dozen stereos were going at once out the open windows and sliding glass doors. Low-voltage garden lights glowed through the night foliage, up and down driveways and in the yards. Neighborhood people wandered around with beer bottles or joints in their hands, or lounged on the little bridges, watching the fuss.
What? You forgot to put it in something waterproof again? Oops.
Doc had Eldrano's address from Bigfoot's field interrogation card. Almost before he had time to knock, the door was opened by a fat guy with thick eyeglasses and a little tiny mustache, holding and chalking a pool cue handsomely inlaid with mother of pearl.
What? No camera crew?
Actually, I'm here representing HULK. That's Heroin Users Liberation Collective. We work out of Sacramento and we're basically a lobby in the state assembly for junkie civil rights. May I offer our condolences for your loss?
Hi, I'm Pepe. And junkies, in fact, dopers in general, are diseased human trash who wouldn't know what to do with civil rights if it walked up and bit them on the ass. Not that civil rights actually does that, understand? Oh, come on in. By the way, do you happen to play 8-ball?
The walls inside were fiberboard and painted prison pink, a shade at that time believed to produce calm among the institutionalized. Every room had a pool table in it, including little bar-size units for the bathroom and kitchen. There were nearly as many TV sets. Pepe, who appeared to have had nobody to talk to or at since Eldrano's passing, kept up a monologue into which Doc now and then tried to slip a question.
Not that I begrudged him the money he borrowed or even owed me, because I was always the consistently better one in terms of pool playing. But what really annoyed me was the loan sharks and the thugs they used to send around. If money at high interest was the whole story, well, that would have its own integrity, I suppose. But they also deal in pain and forgiveness, their forgiveness. And they traffic with agencies of command and control who will sooner or later betray all agreements they make because among the invisible powers there is no trust and no respect.
He had paused briefly in front of one of the TV sets to flip through the channels. Doc took the occasion to ask,
"Do you think it could have been one of those loan sharks who killed Leonard?"
Except that all that was over. For the first time since I knew him, Lenny was free of debt. My impression is that up at some level, somebody had decided to forgive everything he owed. But then, in addition, every month a check also started coming for him in the mail. Once or twice I would sneak a look at the amount. Serious money, my friend. What was your name again?
Larry. Hi. This money, you think it was from a client?
I asked, naturally. And sometimes he'd say operating expenses. And sometimes he'd call it a retainer fee. But one night, he shouldn't have been using, but it was the Christmas holidays. He was in this mood, being nice to everybody, putting a little extra weight in the bags. Around 3 in the morning, he started freaking out, and that's when he mentioned blood money. And I asked about that later, and he pretended he didn't remember, but I knew his face by then, every pore, and he remembered all right. Something was corroding him from inside. You'd never know to look at him, but he had a conscience. One of those checks showed up last week, and normally Lenny would have been out to the bank first thing to deposit it. But this one, he just let sit. He was very upset about something. Here, look, this is it. No use to me. Not like I ever had any power of attorney.
The check was drawn on the Arbolata Savings and Loan in Ojai, one of Mickey Wolfman's, Doc recalled, also used by the Chryskylodon Institute, and signed by a financial officer whose name neither of them could read.
Worse than a forged prescription, Pepe said.
A nice piece of change here, Pepe. There has to be some way you can cash this.
Maybe I should just donate it to your organization. In Leonard's name, of course.
I'm not going to pressure you one way or the other, though it might help with our new Save a Rock and Roller program.
You know how many musicians have been overdosing in recent years? It's an epidemic. I've noticed it especially in my own area. Surf music. I happen to be a huge fan of the boards. Fact, it's how I got personally involved in overdose prevention ever since one of their sax players passed away. Remember Coy Harlingen? It could have been some unexpected side effect from all the dope he'd been smoking, but Doc now felt an ice-cold electric shock blasting through the room. Pepe went rigid. His face, even with all the pink reflection in here, drained suddenly to an alarming white. And Doc saw the pain he must have been in all this time. How much Leonard must have meant to him. How he must have thought all the desperate talking would get him through this. But here was something he'd been forbidden to talk about. Maybe even suspicions of his own that he could not allow himself to go into, with Coy Harlingen clearly at the heart of it. Pepe's silence went on. The multiple voices of the TV sets in all the rooms combined in jagged disharmony, till far too late he finally said,
"No, that name doesn't register. But I understand. Too many needless losses. Your people are in a position to do something wonderful. I'm sure."
If El Drano, on somebody's orders, had switched the 3% shit he'd been selling Coy for something that was sure to kill him, then it seemed clear that nobody had bothered to tell him later about it being a scam, and that Coy was still alive. All this time they let him think he was a murderer. Was it finally too much for this conscience Pepe said he had? Was he about to go confess to somebody? Who wouldn't have wanted him to do that? On one of the pool tables lay an impossible arrangement of balls ready for some superhero of the sport to address.
"One of Lenny's safety shots," Pepe said. "It's been there ever since he stepped out and never came back. I keep meaning to finish the game. I know I could run the table, but somehow..."
Doc walked back to his car through a slightly more calmed neighborhood. The dopers were all back indoors, heading for the bedding. The uproar had died down. The moon was out. What had been found again was found. What was lost was gone for good, except for what some lucky dredge folks tomorrow would happen across. Lost and not lost. And what Sancho called Lagan. Deliberately lost. And found again. And there was something now scratching like a rogue chicken at the fringes of the unkempt barnyard that was Doc's brain. But he couldn't quite locate it, let alone account for the critter when evening rolled around. He thought he'd better go discuss Adrian Prussia with Fritz, who'd had more of a history with the loan shark than Doc did. Sparky, who worked the vampire shift, hadn't come in yet.
"I wouldn't go near Adrian," Fritz advised. "He's no longer the wholesome Chamber of Commerce big shot we used to know in the olden days, Doc. He's bad shit anymore."
"How can he be worse than he was? He's the reason I quit being a pacifist and started packing."
"Something happened to him. He made a deal with somebody bigger than him. Bigger than anything he was into up till then."
"I heard something about him along the same lines out in Venice tonight. Agencies of command and control is how it went. Seemed strange at the time. Who have you been talking to?"
"State Attorney General's office. They've been after him for years. But nobody can touch him, partly because of this interesting portfolio of IOUs he's holding. The amounts themselves aren't all that huge, but taken one at a time, it's always enough to guarantee obedience."
"Obedience to?"
"Commanders, controllers. Prussia gets the money plus the VIG. And the others get what they want done, done."
"But there's loan sharks everywhere. Are they all in on this too?"
"Maybe not. Prussia's allergic to competition. Anybody started threatening his share, they'd be apt to suddenly wind up in distress."
"Dead?"
"If you want to put it that way.
But the more of that he does,
The better his chances of being popped, yeah, you'd think. But not if he's running the ones most apt to do the popping.
LAPD?
Oh, heaven forfend.
And Precious immunity from them would also extend to the people he sends around to collect.
How it usually works.
Then something here is ungroovy. Doc ran down Puck Beaverton's history briefly. The last time he got popped, I looked it up. One seed they found in his vacuum cleaner bag. My little nephew, who's 5, could have got him off. But nobody fixed it. He still got arrested. And with his record, he could have been in for a Zip 6 at least.
Maybe some cop offended?
Not likely any of the cops who borrowed from Prussia. That was all easy terms and friendly relations. But just about the only one of Prussia's people that ever got run in was Puck.
So it was really personal.
Bummer. Means I have to talk to Bigfoot again.
You should know how to do that by now.
No, I mean human to human.
Jesus. Don't tell me how that comes out.
Doc figured he'd be likely to run into Bigfoot out at the Waste of Perp target range down off South La Brea. For some reason, Bigfoot liked to use civilian ranges. Had the LAPD 86'd him from cop facilities? Were there too many colleagues looking to shoot him down and pretend it was an accident? Doc wasn't about to ask why. He went out to the range after supper time as soon as it got dark. He knew that Bigfoot preferred the urban, gang-related, and hippie, or UGG, section, where full-length plastic images of Black, Chicano, and long-haired menaces to society came lurching at you on a 3D shooting gallery-type arrangement while you blew the suckers to shreds. Doc himself liked to spend most of his time on the low-light part of the range. Lately, he'd come to regard these visits as not so much about exercising night vision as John Garfield, dead in the gutter, and dead from real-world Hollywood betrayal and persecution, and the controlling order under which outcomes like this were unavoidable, because they ran off of cold will and muzzle velocity and rounds discharged in the dark. Sure enough, there was Bigfoot at the cash register, just settling up.
Need to talk, Doc said. I was headed for the rain check room.
This esteemed West Hollywood saloon was known in those days for a thrifty approach to light bills. Doc and Bigfoot found a booth in back.
Mrs. Bjornson sends her regards, by the way.
What are you talking about? She hates me.
No, actually, you quite intrigue her now. If I weren't so confident in my marriage, I'd almost be jealous.
Doc tried to remove all sympathy from his face while thinking, "Ah, you poor Swedish fish, and I hope you're keeping that Service 38 out of everybody's reach." Far as Doc could see, the woman was dangerously unbalanced, and he estimated a week and a half before apocalypse descended upon the Bjornsons.
Well, sure, tell her howdy. Anything else I can do for you this evening?
Correct me if I'm mistaken here, Bigfoot, but it's been clear to me for some time that you're desperate to have a word with Puck Beaverton, but can't let on, because otherwise you're in deep shit with powers unnamed. So instead, you keep putting me out there on point for all them AKs in the jungle to open up on. Have I got that more or less right so far?
We're in sensitive territory here, Sportello.
Yes, I know all that, man. But somebody's gonna have to be less sensitive for a minute and just wipe off their chin and stand up and deal with it. 'Cause I'm tired of this being jacked around all the time. If there's something you need, just come on out and say it. How hard can that be? With Doc, this passed for an outburst, and Bigfoot gazed back in what, with him, passed for astonishment. He nodded at Doc's shirt pocket.
Mind if I have one of those? You don't want to start smoking, Bigfoot. Smoking's bad for your ass.
Yes, well, I wasn't planning to smoke it in my ass, was I?
How am I supposed to know that?
Bigfoot lit up, puffed without inhaling in a way Doc found annoying, and said,
Among certain of my colleagues, Puck Beaverton, for a felony offender with conspicuous impulse control issues and a swastika on his head, was always considered rather a charming fellow, really.
He took half a beat, for any number of reasons.
And now I'm supposed to say?
Throwing you a cue. I'm sorry, it's a habit.
Like smoking?
All right.
Bigfoot squashed out the cigarette irritably and glared at Doc, who by reflex was already looking covetously at the lengthy butt.
Puck's former employer, AP Finance, did regular business with many officers in the department, all of it friendly, and as far as I know, above board, perhaps with one unhappy exception.
A name which must not be spoken aloud.
Doc shrugged. Part of that IA hang-up you keep mentioning.
Breezily enough, he hoped.
Please understand, without a preeminent need to know.
Groovy with me, Bigfoot. And this unnamable cop, how did Puck happen to feel about him?
Hated him, and the hatred was mutual, for...
Dropping then into second thoughts.
For good reason. But you have an 11th commandment about criticizing a fellow flatfoot, I can dig that.
Doc then had a thought.
Is it okay to ask if this party is still on the job?
He's...
The silence was as clear as the word withheld.
His status is inactive.
Files unavailable too, I bet.
The IA has locked it all down till the year 2000.
Don't sound like it was natural causes, somehow. Who do you thank, as Elvis always says, when you have such luck?
Aside from the obvious, you mean?
Puck, sure, it could have been him. But tell me now, this cop, what do we call him, Officer X?
Detective.
Okay, let's say this mystery cop was actually the one who arrested Puck on that chicken shit dope seed charge, hoping, with his record, he'd be put back in Folsom for a while. If it wasn't Puck who did him, then, let's see, who else? Oh, how about Adrian Prussia, who can't afford to look bad in front of the community if even one of his former people gets arrested, maybe convicted? That's a shot somebody's taking not just at Puck, but at him. Almost as bad as some deadbeat refusing to pay back a loan. What happens in those cases again? I forget.
You begin to see.
Bigfoot glumly nodding.
You think it's all one big monolithic fun fest at the LAPD, don't you? Nothing to do all day but figure out new ways to persecute you hippie scum. Instead, it might as well be the yard at San Quentin. Gangs, addicts, butches and bitches and snitches and everybody's packing.
Can I say something out loud? Is anybody listening?
Everybody. Nobody. Does it matter?
Say Adrian Prussia iced this Detective X or had it done. And what happens? Nothing. Maybe everybody in LAPD knows he did the deed, but there's no back-channel outcries in the paper. No vigilante revenge by horrified fellow officers. No. Instead... IA locks it all up tight for the next 30 years, everybody pretending it's another cop hero fallen in the line of duty. Forget about decency or respecting the memories of all the real dead cop heroes. How can you people be that fucking unprofessional?
It gets even worse, Bigfoot said in a slowly stifled way,
as if trying in vain to call to Doc out of years of history forbidden to civilians.
Prussia has been prime suspect in, let's say, a number of homicides. And each time, upon intervention from the highest levels, he's walked.
And you're saying what? Ain't it awful?
I'm saying there's a reason for everything, Doc.
And before you get too indignant, you might want to look at why internal affairs should even be duped into this in the first place, let alone be the office that's sitting on the story.
I give up. Why?
Figure it out. Use what's left of your brain. The trouble with you people is you never know when somebody's doing you a favor. You think whatever it is, you're entitled because you're cute or something.
He got up, dropped a handful of shrapnel on the table, tossed a disgruntled salute to the barkeep, and prepared to step out into the street.
Go look in a mirror sometime. Dig yourself, man, till you understand that nobody owes you anything. Then get back to me.
Doc had seen Bigfoot out of sorts now and then, but this was getting downright emotional.
They stood on the corner of Santa Monica and Sweetser.
Where were you parked? Said Bigfoot.
Off of Fairfax.
My direction as well.
Walk with me, Sportello. I'll show you something.
They began to stroll along Santa Monica. Hippies were thumbing rides up and down the street. Rock and roll was blasting from car radios. Musicians, who'd just come awake, were drifting out of the Tropicana, looking for evening breakfast. Reefer smoke hung in pockets up and down the street, waiting to ambush the unwary pedestrian. Men were murmuring to each other in doorways. After a few blocks, Bigfoot turned right and ambled down toward Melrose.
This looking familiar yet?
Doc had an intuition. It's Puck's old neighborhood.
He started looking for the overgrown courtyard complex Trillium had told him about. His nose began to run, and his clavicles to shiver, and he wondered if somehow one or all of the happy threesome were about to appear, to what Sortilege liked to call manifest, and from the corner of his eye he noticed Bigfoot watching him closely. Yes, and who says there can't be time travel, or that places with real-world addresses can't be haunted, not only by the dead, but by the living as well? It helps to smoke a lot of weed and to do acid off and on. But sometimes even a literal-minded Natchmeister like Bigfoot could manage it. They approached a courtyard apartment building nearly dissolved in the evening.
Go have a look around, Sportello. Sit out by that pool there under the New Zealand tree ferns. Experience the night.
He made a show of looking at his watch.
Regretfully, I have to be moving along. The missus will be expecting me.
One special lady for sure. Pass on my regards. No lights, either incandescent or cathode ray, showed in any of the apartment windows. The whole place might have been deserted. The traffic on Santa Monica was scarcely audible. The moon rose. Small critters went running around in the undergrowth. What came creeping out of the shrubbery after a while actually were not ghosts, but logical conclusions. If Internal Affairs was hushing up the murder of an LAPD detective, then somebody in the department must have wanted him dead. If they were unwilling to do it themselves, then they were hiring contract specialists, and the list plausibly could have included Adrian Prussia. It would be interesting to look into the other murder raps Bigfoot claimed that Prussia had beaten. But even on the remote chance Bigfoot had access to it, there might be no direct way for him to get the information to Doc, which might explain why it looked so much like he'd been hustling Doc from the jump into discovering some other way into the loan shark's history. Doc wondered what way that might be. Fritz's ARPANET would be too much of a crapshoot. According to Fritz, you never knew from one day to the next what you'd find on it, or wouldn't find. Which left Penny, who had already shopped him to Los Federales, and might have little if any problem reshopping him to the LAPD. Penny, who might not even want to see him anymore. That Penny. Chapter 16.
Doc had never kept count, but he'd probably spent way more time in the Hall of Justice on the upper floors in the men's lockup than downstairs on the other side of the law. The elevators were run by a squad of uniformed women, commanded and terrified by a large, jail matronly lady with an afro who stood in the lobby with a pair of castanets, dispatching the individual cars with different signals. Might mean, for example, elevator two's up next. That's 45 seconds in and out. Let's be moving it. And so forth. She gave Doc a serious once-over before letting him aboard. Penny shared her cubicle with another deputy DA named Roose Frothingham. When Doc put his head in the door, Penny did not exactly gasp, but did start hiccuping uncontrollably.
"Are you all right?" said Roose.
Between hiccups, Penny explained, though all Doc could make out was,
"The one I was telling you about."
"Should I call security?" Penny threw Doc an inquiring look, like, "So, should she?" It might as well be stewardy-eye out on the beach around here. Roose sat rigidly at her desk, pretending to read through a file. Penny excused herself and headed for the ladies' lounge, leaving Doc immersed in Roose's glare like an old car radiator in an acid bath. After a while, he got up and ankled his way down the corridor and met Penny coming out of the toilet.
"Only wondering when you'd be free for dinner. Didn't mean to freak you out. I'll even spring for it."
That sideways look.
"Thought you'd never want to speak to me again."
"The FBI has actually been fantastically stimulating company, so I figure at least I owe you some ribs or something."
What it turned out to be was a recently opened gourmet health food joint off Melrose called The Price of Wisdom, which Doc had heard about from Dinas, who'd given it a rave. It was upstairs from a dilapidated bar where Doc remembered hanging out during one of his seedier phases. He forgot which. Penny looked up at the flickering red neon sign and frowned.
"Ruby's Lounge, uh-huh. I remember it well. It used to be good for at least one felony arrest per week.
Groovy cheeseburgers, as I recall.
Voted unanimously by local food critics the Southland's most toxic.
Sure, but it kept down the health code violations. All those mice and roaches every morning with their little feet in the air, stone dead next to the burgers that done the deed."
Getting hungrier by the minute.
Directed by a hand-lettered sign reading, "The Price of Wisdom is Above Rubies," Job, chapter 28, verse 18, Doc and Penny ascended into a room full of ferns, exposed bricks, stained glass, tablecloths on the tables, and Vivaldi on the sound system. None of these for Doc too promising. Waiting for a table, he eyeballed the clientele, many of whom seemed to have fitness issues, gazing at each other over and around salads detailed as the miniature mountains in Zen gardens, trying to identify various soybean-derived objects with the aid of pocket flashlights or magnifying lenses, sitting with knife and fork gripped in either fist regarding platters of eggplant Wellington or rhomboids of vivid green kale loaf on plates too big for them by an order of magnitude. Doc began to wonder, too late, just how stoned Dinas had been when he came in here. It didn't get any more encouraging when the menus finally arrived.
"Can you read any of this?" Doc said after a while. "I can't read this. Is it me, or some foreign language thing?"
She gave him a smile he had learned not to trust too heavily.
"Yes, so clear something up for me, Doc, because taking me out to a place like this could be construed as a hostile act. Are you pissed off at me?"
"Not pissed off?" "That's the choice? Well, give me a minute."
"Those federal guys helped me out with something once. This seemed like an easy way to return the favor."
That's me, said Doc. Always easy.
You are pissed off.
I'm over it. But you didn't ask me beforehand.
You would have said no. You people all hate the FBI.
What are you talking about, us people? I was a Dick Tracy Jr. G-man, sent away for this kit, learned how to snoop on all the neighbors, fingerprinted everybody in first grade, got the ink all over everything. They sent me to the principal's office. But I'm a junior G-man. They know about me in Washington, D.C. I had to stay after school for a month. But it was Mrs. Keeley, and I got to look up her dress now and then, so that was cool.
What a horrible little boy.
See, it was way before they invented miniskirts.
Listen, Doc, the feds really want to know what you were doing in Vegas.
Hanging with Frank and the gang, playing a little baccarat. More important, what were your two cheap suit idiot friends doing there getting in my face?
Please, they can subpoena you. They have permanent grand juries that have been known to indict a bean burrito. They can put you in a world of heartache.
Just to find out why I went to Vegas? That sounds really cost-effective.
Or you can tell me, and I'll tell them.
As one junior G person to another, Penny, what are you getting out of this?
She grew solemn. Maybe you don't want to know.
Let me guess. It isn't something nice they'll do for you. It's something shitty they won't do to you.
She touched his hand. As if she did it so seldom, she wasn't sure of how.
If I could believe for one second that I could protect you?
At this point, even a practical idea would help.
Midnight. Pitch dark. Can't remember whether they drained the pool or not. Hey, what the fuck's it matter? He bounced once, twice, then off the end of the board, and down in a blind cannonball. You probably know your pals have Mickey Wolfman.
The FBI.
There might have been a question mark at the end, but Doc didn't hear it. Her eyes narrowed, and he noticed enough of a pulse in her temple to make one of her drop earrings begin to flash like a warning light.
We've suspected, but we can't prove anything. Can you?
I saw him in their custody.
You saw him?
She thought for a few seconds, tapping a high school marching band beat on the tablecloth.
Would you be willing to depone for me?
Sure, babe, you bet. Wait a minute. What does that mean?
You, me, a tape machine, maybe another DDA to witness it.
Wow, I'll even throw in a few bars of That's Amore. Only thing is...
All right, what is it you want?
I need to look at somebody's jacket. Ancient history, but it's still under seal. Like till 2000.
That's it? No big thing. We do that all the time.
What? Break into officially sealed records? And here I had such faith in the system.
At this rate, you'll be ready for your bar exam any day now. Listen, would you mind if we just went back to my place?
And immediately, Doc, though he would have wagered against it, got a hard-on.
As if she'd noticed it, she added, And we can pick up a pizza on the way.
There was a time back in his period of impulse control deficit when Doc's reply would have had to be, Marry me. What he said now was, Your hair is different.
Somebody talked me into seeing this hotshot on Rodeo Drive. He puts in these streaks, see?
Groovy. Looks like you've been living at the beach for a while.
They were promoting a surfer chick special.
Just for me, huh?
Who else, Doc?
Back at Penny's place, it took maybe a minute and a half to deal with the pizza. Both of them reached at the same time for the last slice. I believe this is mine, said Doc.
Penny let go of the pizza and slid her hand down, took hold of his penis, and gave it a squeeze. And this, I believe.
She reached over a stash box with some Asian buds in it he'd been smelling since he came in the room.
Rolla's one while I go find an appropriate outfit.
He was just twisting the ends of the joint when she came back wearing nothing at all.
There you go. Now, you sure you're not pissed off?
Me? Pissed off? What's that?
You know, if somebody I cared about, even in a casual sex sort of way, had shopped me to the FBI, I'd certainly think twice.
Doc lit up and passed her the joint.
I mean,
she added thoughtfully when next she exhaled,
if it was my dick, and some self-satisfied lady prosecutor thought she was getting away with something?
Oh, said Doc. Well, you've got a point. Here, let me...
Just try it, she cried. You drug-crazed hippie freak. Get your hand out of there. Who said you could do that? Let go of my...
What do you think you're...
By which time they were fucking, you could say, energetically. It was quick, not too quick. It was mean and nasty enough. It was great stoned fun. And in fact, for an untimably short moment, Doc believed it was somehow never going to be over. Though he managed not to get panicked about that. Normally, Penny would have jumped right up again and gotten re-immersed in some straight-world activity. And Doc would have found his way to the TV set on some chance the playoffs, even though it was Eastern Division tonight, might still be on. But instead, as if both appreciated the importance of silence and embrace, they just lay there and lit up again and took time to finish the joint, which, owing to its high resin content, had considerately gone out the instant it hit the ashtray. Too soon, however, like reality, marching into the room, flipping on the lights, taking a gander and going harumph, it was time for the 11 o'clock news, taken up, as always, and for Penny more and more annoyingly, by developments in the Manson case about to go to trial.
Give it a rest, Bugliosi, she snarled at the screen, while the lead prosecutor was having his nightly couple of minutes with the cameras.
Would have thought all this pretrial stuff be right up your alley, Doc said.
It was, for a while. They let me get in on a couple of depositions, but it's too much like boys up in a treehouse. The only part I enjoy anymore is hearing how all these hippie chicks did everything Manson told them to do. That master-slave thing, you know? It's kind of cute.
Oh, yeah. You never told me you were into that, Penny. You mean all this time we could have been...
With you? Forget it, Doc.
What?
Well... Was that what they call a mischievous gleam in her eye? You're almost short enough, I guess. But see, it isn't only the hypnotic stare. Charlie's big appeal is that he's down there eyeball to eyeball with the ladies he's ordering around. It might be about fucking Daddy, but the really perverse thrill is that Daddy's only 5'2".
Wow, man. Well, I could work on that.
Keep me up to date anyway.
A promo came on for the late movie, which tonight happened to be Ghidra, the Three-Headed Monster, 1964.
Hey, Penny, were you going in tomorrow?
Maybe around midday. Unless you have a better idea, I'm just going to go crash, I think.
No, wait a minute. Here's something you might really like.
He tried to explain that this Japanese monster movie was actually a remake of the classic chick flick Roman Holiday, 1953, both movies featuring a stylish princess visiting another country who meets a working-class protag who becomes sweet on her, although, despite having some adventures together, the two at the end must part. But somewhere in the middle of this review, Penny, having slid gracefully to her knees and begun sucking his cock, next thing either of them knew, there they were fucking again. Afterward, as they were sitting on the couch, the movie came on. Doc must have drifted away somewhere in the middle, but toward the end, he woke up to find Penny sniffling into a Kleenex, transfixed by the human or romantic part of the plotline after all. Next day was, as they say, another day, and by the time Doc found himself in the Hall of Justice,